From the WLRN studios at the Miami Herald, welcome to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening today. $635 million. It's a big chunk of change. Over a year, it's almost $2 million per day. And stretched out across the state, it's more than $31 for every Floridian, man, woman, and child. $635 million. That's the estimate for how much of a budget surplus state lawmakers will have when they gather in January in Tallahassee to decide the next fiscal year state budget. Now, this year's billion-dollar budget surplus was almost entirely swallowed by federal cuts to health care programs for low-income Floridians. It's impossible to distill a $78 billion state budget down to one number in one program, certainly. But the biggest slice of the budget and the biggest piece of what the Legislative Office of Economic and Demographic Research calls high-priority needs is health care. It's Medicaid, health care for low-income Floridians. It's the money that triggered the Florida House to end its regular session 2 days early last spring. It's what pushed lawmakers into a special session in June in order to agree to a budget at all for this year, and it's likely to dominate the budget talks when the next legislative session begins in January. Like most debates over money, it's a debate over control. Florida Republicans have been dead set against expanding Medicaid as it exists currently under the Affordable Care Act. Doing so would open the way for hundreds of millions of dollars to come to Florida. Florida is one of 19 states that have not expanded Medicaid.
We can't force them to do it, and it means that a lot of people are falling through the cracks.
President Obama spoke late last week in the Oval Office to our Florida Public Radio colleague, Mary Shedden of Health News Florida.
We can't change the design of the law to reach those folks. What we have to do is hopefully the people of Florida begin to recognize over the next year, 2 years, 3 years, that it makes no sense for states to essentially refuse help from the federal government.
That help from the federal government this year to pay for what's called uncompensated care for low-income Floridians was cut by half to about $1 billion coming from Washington. It's likely to be cut by almost another 50% next year, down to about $600 billion into Florida. And all that money will disappear in the next year and a half. There are lots of money decisions the Florida lawmakers have to make in the months ahead. Tax cuts, money for education, the environment, job growth, transportation, and on and on. Financially, perhaps no decision is greater and with the potential of having a lasting impact than how the state will deal with the cost of health care, whether that money comes from the federal government, comes from the state government, or is passed on to other health care consumers. And that's where we begin the Sunshine Economy with a quartet of lawmakers from throughout South Florida. We have Representative Jose Javier Rodriguez, a Democrat, District 112 from downtown Miami. Representative, welcome to the Sunshine Economy.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Representative George Moraitis, Republican District 93 from Hollywood to Hillsborough Beach in Broward County. Representative, welcome to you.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Senator Anna Terry Flores, Republican District 37 from the Kendall area. Senator, welcome to you. Nice to see you.
Good morning.
And we will be joined by Senator Maria Sachs, Democrat from District 34 in North Broward and Palm Beach County in just a matter of moments. Let's start in the House. Let's start in the Republican House. Will Florida expand Medicaid, Representative Moraitis?
Tom, I think that issue was really decided in the last session. I mean, it was obviously very dramatic in the way that the regular session ended without a budget because of the disagreement on that point. We then went to a special session where, fortunately, we were able to come to an agreement. We did not accept the expansion, but we did make sure that the uninsured Floridians were taken care of.
And how were they taken care of in your estimation?
They're taken care of by continuing to provide the money for the hospitals to provide the charity care, which is vital to provide that. It's important to note that when we get into Medicaid, that the health care outcomes, there have been several studies, University of Virginia, Oregon, that show that whether people are on Medicaid or uninsured, the health care outcomes are actually no different.
No different in terms of the health of the population?
In terms of the quality of outcome, in terms of did you actually heal, did you have a better outcome as opposed to whether you're insured on Medicaid or uninsured.
Representative Rodriguez, the health care will be delivered. The question is who's going to pay for it.
Right. I think, yeah, when we're talking about health care delivery, I would take issue with that study. I'm not familiar with it. I think the a lot of what we're talking about at a fundamental level is that Obamacare is controversial, it's complicated, some of it works, some of it doesn't, but essentially what it does is, in terms of funding for those most needy in the healthcare universe, what it does is instead of massively subsidizing our emergency rooms. The idea is to expand the level of health care that people get so that they could actually receive health care and not essentially emergency room care as their sort of primary care. And the cost differential is massive. I mean, it's I'm trying to remember the figures, but it's hundreds of millions of dollars that we spend.
Are you going to deliver it on the front end, primary care, regular physicals, or on the back end when it's an emergency?
Exactly, yeah. And so I think that the cost of covering I think there's something around 200,000 people in Miami-Dade, for example, without health care.
800,000 throughout the state of Florida that fall into the gap.
Yeah, and more or less a quarter of them are here in Miami-Dade County. And currently through, you know, what we pay through taxes at Jackson, we cover like a tenth of that for several times the cost, because emergency room is the absolute most expensive way to give somebody health care.
Senator Flores, let me ask you, you know, the Senate, as we last left the Senate back in the springtime, had a plan to privatize, expand Medicaid in kind of a Florida-specific way. That plan failed. When you hear from the Republican representatives from the House that expansion is off the table in the next session, what could we expect out of the Senate, if anything?
Well, I would start off by saying, I guess that unfortunately, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over again and expecting a different result. So for the short term, I guess we could say the House won. But at the long term, the question is, at what cost? And you know, the debate from the House has centered upon the fact that the cost of healthcare overall is very high in this state. And that is, in their opinion, because of hospital care. And I would say that that's something certainly worth exploring. My opinion, and I think the opinion of the majority of the Senate, is to say really what we need to do is look at both issues at the same time and say, yes, we agree we need to look at the overall cost of healthcare. Why does an aspirin at a hospital cost 10 times what it costs at CVS? Why does, you know, why do these things cost so much? We should look at that. But in the meantime, there are real people that really get sick, that really need care. These are real human beings. And as taxpayers, we pay for them either way. So the solution would be to do both conversations at the same time. Unfortunately, it seems like we're only going to be able to do one.
Representative Moraitis, we've heard from Republican leadership in the House that there will be two conversations, but there will not be combined. It will be a conversation about access to health care. It'll be a conversation about cost of health care. Why not put those two together?
Well, again, I do feel the access is there. I know we keep saying, again, it turns out that actually
hospitals cannot refuse health care.
Right.
So, yes, there is access, no right. doubt about it. The question is at what cost, right?
Right. And I would just also take issue with Representative Rodriguez, who I have a lot of respect for. It actually has shown that when they expand Medicaid in other states that the emergency room visits actually go up. So it's actually not a question of do you treat people at the front end or their back end. We have a very robust clinic system in the state. We should do that, the federally qualified health care center. So there's a lot of things that the state does pay for and the federal government helps pay for to provide access to health care. So, again, it's really more about how do we pay for it? How much is Washington going to shoulder?
Yeah, and we know Washington is shouldering less and less. The low-income pool of funds that go to the uncompensated care to the safety net hospitals was cut by about 50% this fiscal year. It's going to be cut by another 40% next fiscal year, and it runs out entirely by June of 2017. And this has often been characterized as a fight between Florida Republicans and the Obama administration, especially Florida House Republicans like yourself, Representative. Here's what the Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell told us earlier this month about how Florida could expand Medicaid if there's actual conversations between Florida House Republicans and the White House.
My door stands open. The number of folks that would be impacted in the state of Florida with regard to the potential for expanding health insurance in that way is in the hundreds of thousands, getting close to a million.
So, Representative Moraitis, is there room to negotiate as far as Florida Republicans in the House are concerned with the Obama administration?
Again, I mean, one of the issues we had in the Senate plan did try to put some work requirements into the Medicaid. But one of the things I philosophically and I think a lot of my colleagues have a problem with is that it's offering an insurance program, which is actually highly unsuccessful in Medicaid. And so the reimbursement rates really should go up, and that's part of what we addressed. But secondly, it's offering them to people who could work but are not. And Even though the Senate will say that our plan had a work requirement, the truth is the Obama administration has refused in every case in every state that's tried to impose a work requirement to require that. So, you know, Medicaid, when it was set up in the Great Society program of the Johnson administration, was really supposed to be for, you know, women, families with children, those sorts of things. This, what the Obamacare does, is to expand it into sort of a working age or working ability population.
So it sounds like there's not much room to negotiate right now between what your fellow Republicans in the House would like to do and what the Obama administration wants to do under the Affordable Care Act.
I mean, I don't want to be like say we're unreasonable, but I would just say we kind of had that debate just a few months ago. It ended.
Neither side has changed their position.
And
much
there hasn't
at all.
Been an election, so correct.
Yeah. Representative Rodriguez?
Yeah, I think what's unfortunate for me, we've gone through the arguments back and forth, and I think fundamentally for me, and I think for a lot of the folks who think that we should figure out a way to accept this money and expand healthcare, for a lot of us, it really is a simple issue. We are not in Congress, whether some of us would like to be or not. We're not in the Supreme Court. We can't rewrite Obamacare. So the choice is, how are we going to accept these monies in a way that would be acceptable for Florida? The Florida Senate came up with a plan that liberal Democrats, conservative Republicans, neither of them liked, which I think is probably a good litmus test as to it was a good compromise, right?
And so both parties are unhappy,
right? And I think from my perspective, I'm not trying to be too partisan here, but it really does feel from the beginning this is just it's called Obamacare, and for a lot of people it's that simple. It's just it's a Republican primary in some parts of the state. You just can't be anywhere near Obama, even if we don't really have a choice, even if it's almost a million Floridians without health insurance. The arguments that we hear are these non-arguments. I mean, the idea that the expansion population, the people who would be covered if not, as Rep. Morita said, are low-wage working people. So it's not this welfare argument about these are people who could work. Yes, they're working, and they're using the emergency room because they don't have any other choice.
Well, on the partisan side, Representative Moritis is a Republican elected from Broward County, so we should acknowledge at least that. And Representative Rodriguez is a Democrat elected from Miami-Dade County.
Yeah,
let's go to the gentlewoman from Kendall here. Senator Flores, a Republican elected from South Dade County. You started by saying, you know, the definition of insanity is to do the same thing again. So what is going to be different in the debate over how to pay for health care in Florida with fewer federal dollars coming in this next legislative session?
Well, I think that part of the debate is that, now knowing that I guess Medicaid expansion or any alternative thereof is off the table, at least for this session, I think that we will start to look at what are the overall costs of healthcare? Is there a level four competition in healthcare? Is there a way to expand usage of neighborhood clinics, of that kind of thing? So I think that we will have a more robust conversation on that. And then as far as the funding side, you know, I am an eternal optimist, and I hope that things don't get worse so that they would have to get better. But there is the realistic side of me as well that says, you know, we may be entering a point where right now we are going to have the federal government is going to be sending at least some money down. And so that will patchwork through it and we'll put a Band-Aid on until next year. But at some point, the bleeding is not going to stop.
It gets worse in 2017. It goes from $600 million to zero.
To zero. And that's real money. $600 million is a lot of money. And that's when we start having to have the conversations and the questions of, well, is it this or that? Because in Florida, it's a zero-sum game. We cannot fund our budget based on debt. So is it healthcare funding or is it public school funding? Is it healthcare funding or is it transportation funding? $600 million is a real hole for us to have to fill in. And hopefully there are some long-term solutions that come from the House.
And we are having that discussion about prices, no doubt about it. The governor is driving this conversation as well. Governor Scott has talked about pushing for more healthcare transparency, coming, of course, from a former hospital CEO himself. He wants to make sure that hospitals post prices and has proposed that the average payments they receive is made public along with different quality measures that the hospitals have as well for delivering health care.
Food's a necessity. Do you know what you pay for food? Absolutely. Before you buy it, you know exactly what you pay. If you're going to buy a car, you know what you're going to pay for a car. If you're going to buy a house, you know what you're going to pay for a house. Shouldn't you know exactly what you're going to have to pay for health care?
So when it comes to this debate, Senator Flores, about price transparency, would you support more publicity, more forcing of hospitals?
I absolutely would. And I'm glad that the governor is putting out there and putting out different alternatives. Allow me to get on my soapbox for a moment. But the reason why those other things are different, being your home, your food, your medicine, et cetera, it's because those are covered by real people. And you have to write a check at the end of, you know, at the end of the day or whatever it is. Healthcare is paid for through an insurance company. And so the insurance companies, I mean, that's where if we really are going to have this debate, you need to have health insurance companies at the table.
We've done a lot of investigative work around this, Senator. Insurance companies and healthcare providers, employers, if they're self-insured, they tend to have non-disclosure agreements regarding healthcare pricing contracts. Would you support limiting or reducing or getting rid of entirely those kinds of NDAs, non-disclosure agreements?
I think that we need to at least start somewhere. I mean, there must be a reason why they're, you know, it's totally there. So maybe we don't have to start with just getting rid of them.
Trade secrets, competitive secrets is what they'll say.
We should have that conversation, because now the issue is, if Medicaid is an insurance plan and Obamacare is an insurance plan, Blue Cross Blue Shield, et cetera, the rest are all insurance plans, we should know how much that costs, because the way that healthcare works is you go to the hospital, you have a series of procedures, whatever it is, and then you begin negotiating. So the hospital at that point sends a bill to the insurance company. The insurance company says, oh, no, that's much too high. Let's make it lower. Let's make it higher. And they charge different things for different people. And that is a problem.
Sure. I mean, Representative Moraitis, would you consider reducing the ability for insurance companies and healthcare providers to have confidential price agreements? Price contracts?
I have to say, I'd be careful, first of all, to saying that just publishing prices is going to make a big difference, because like Senator Flores said, the truth is you show up and you look at the prices and you're not really paying it because you already pay a lot in insurance premiums every month. I don't think that, unfortunately, that would be, to me, the answer is more competition. As far as the non-disclosure agreements, I'm always hesitant when we want to sort of get in the middle of somebody's business model when they're, you know, the insurance companies are really trying to save money for everyone. I mean, that's what they're supposed to be doing anyway, by negotiating health contracts. So I would want to know that that's actually going to be a success. I'd probably want to see some other, you know, pilot programs or studies to see if that's worked out or not. Again, I have to say, I kind of fall back down on, you know, typically competition is what tends to drive prices down in any other market.
But the tough thing is competition in this case and prices, you don't see the two. You may see competition in terms of a large number of insurance providers and the competition on the premium side, but you don't see the transparency on the competition of the actual cost of healthcare.
Right. I think what we're, and from the House standpoint, or at least the House Republican standpoint, I think what we're saying is we need to probably open up scope of practice a little bit, you know, in terms of other professions to do some of this work. I think we need to look at the certificate of need program for hospitals to see if, you know, should we allow more hospitals. There are arguments of why we have these programs and these restrictions, but in the end, I talked to somebody a few years ago about some of these things, and it's the truth is, you know, healthcare seems to go up no matter what other sector of the economy doesn't. We have to start addressing some of the fundamental cost drivers, and not just looking at insurance, but actually what is it about the delivery of these services that cost so much and could be brought down in terms of cost.
Republican Representative George Moraitis from Broward County, Republican Senator Ana Terry Flores from Dade County, Representative Jose Rodriguez from Dade County, joining us here on the Sunshine Economy. Plenty more to come ahead of session 2016 for Florida lawmakers. Governor Scott wants to cut taxes, but for whom and by how much? That's next on the Sunshine Economy. We're back on the Sunshine Economy from the WLRN studios at the Miami Herald. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Governor Rick Scott likes to brag that Floridians pay the least amount in state taxes of all 50 states. He wants us to pay less. The governor wants to cut state taxes by another $1 billion over the next 2 years. Here's the governor back in October.
We should be able to do it. We're growing revenues. We are paying down debt. We are we have budget surpluses every year going forward. So we ought to be able to do that year in, year out. We ought to give money back to our taxpayers.
Governor Scott wants a 10-day sales tax holiday for back-to-school supplies. He wants a 9-day sales tax holiday for hurricane supplies. But those pale in comparison to Scott's aim to permanently do away with the corporate income tax for Florida manufacturers and retail businesses, something that he says would save $750 million over 2 years. And he wants to reduce the state tax on commercial real estate leases by 1% from 6% down to 5%. Senator Ana Taylor Flores is with us, Republican from South Dade County. Senator Maria Sachs is joining us, Democrat from North Broward and Palm Beach County. Representative Jose Rodriguez from Miami-Dade, downtown Miami, and George Moraitis from Broward County. Again, to the quartet of Florida lawmakers here on the Sunshine Economy. Senator Sachs, let's begin with you in terms of tax cuts. First of all, welcome to the program. Thank you for battling traffic in Doral on a Monday for us. Do you support the governor's efforts to cut taxes by what he estimates to be $1 billion over 2 years?
First of all, thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Of course.
I now know about the infrastructure here in Miami-Dade. So, Senator Flores, we're going to do something about that and transportation, certainly. So, anyways, I always applaud the governor's efforts at cutting taxes. I was with him when he came to Florida Atlantic University in Boca Raton, and together we all applauded his efforts on cutting taxes on textbooks.
Which he wants to continue again. He has proposed to continue that.
I know. And that's going to result in millions of dollars that we're not going to get in the state, however. So we have to make sure that with our surplus, which we're very proud to have in the state, we have probably close to $635 million mm-hmm. surplus, we have to make sure that we have enough money to pass around to everybody. But I certainly applaud any tax cuts that we can afford.
Representative Moraitis, what about the eliminating corporate taxes for manufacturers, as the governor wants to do?
Thanks. I would support that, Tom. I think that we need to definitely diversify our economy. I think that's kind of where he's going with that, and we all support that. Florida's heavy on tourism, heavy on marine, at least in my area, heavy on agriculture. But, you know, manufacturing is really an area that we need to export more out of the state. And so that's really one of the ways we're going to get there. As far as the retail side of it, I'm not sure I would support that at this point. I have to see a little bit more about where that's going in terms of how's that going to help, because a lot of these retail businesses like Publix and the big, I don't know how that's going to diversify our economy to give them a cut. So I would, again, manufacturing, anything to diversify that, yeah. Cutting the manufacturing sales tax or repealing it, I support all those.
And to be clear, Senator Flores, what the governor is proposing here in terms of the big chunk of a corporate tax cut that he's talking about is a corporate income tax cut, not a sales tax cut. How do Floridians benefit from these tax cut proposals?
Well, I'd echo the comments of Senator Sachs, Representative Moraitis, and say tax cuts are something that, of course, are always very appealing. The question is really exactly what you just mentioned, is how are these real dollars in people's pockets? And so over the last several years, not only have I supported, but I've sponsored the bill on providing the back-to-school sales tax holiday. And just recently, over the last couple years, as our economy improved, it went back from just being 3 days to going back to 10 days. That's a real savings in people's real pockets. That really makes a difference in Florida's families. These other things, one just has to look at, that's the question that the analysis that I will make. The analysis will be, is how does this tax cut translate into savings for Floridians? And then if that's a real savings, then that's something that I can support. We've seen even just last year, with the tax cut in your communication services tax.
This was the cell phone usage and cable usage, state sales tax.
Yes, on your cell phone and right. cable usage. We've now seen that comes out to roughly about, I think, $12 a year at a cost to the state of about $400 million.
Is it worth it?
It might be the time to look it around, to change that around and say, okay, well, if we're going to do a tax cut of $400 million, is there somewhere where we could make that, have it more kind of bang for a buck? Mm-hmm. Something like eliminating sales tax on textbooks. That's something that makes a difference. These other things, I really think that we just need to take a much harsher look at.
Senator Sachs, this is a significant change in taxing policy that the governor is proposing regarding manufacturing. Manufacturing jobs traditionally have paid higher than median wages, no doubt about it, but manufacturing traditionally has been a very low number of payroll jobs in the state of Florida. Eliminating this tax, is the governor essentially participating in tax arbitrage, trying to steal manufacturers from one state, maybe the Rust Belt or the Northeast, and to come down to sunny South Florida and pay no state income tax?
That would be really good if we could get some of these great big manufacturing jobs out of any place, Northeast, the West. But I'd like to see them come through Enterprise Florida. I mean, if we're going to bring a company down here, we have got we've got a lot of tax incentives that we can give them through Enterprise Florida. As I said before, With the budget that we have, that was that budget, that surplus budget that we have, was built on the backs of Floridians. I agree with Senator Flores. I like to see tax savings in the pockets of Floridians, such as our back-to-school tax, such as the sales tax help for kids going to college for textbooks. When it comes to manufacturing, let's see what they have. Let's see how many jobs they can produce. Let's see what they can do for the state of Florida. Let's identify those manufacturers. If they need help, we've got ways to help.
And we'll dig in a little bit more to economic development, the idea of using state tax dollars to lure companies here in the next segment. But Representative Rodriguez, I want to give you a chance here. Can Florida afford these kinds of tax cuts? When we're talking about $600 billion of federal dollars for low-income health care disappearing over the next 18 months, can Florida and Florida taxpayers afford these kinds of cuts?
Well, I think that I think the starting point when we're talking about the manufacturing tax rise is absolutely what Rep. Moraitis was talking about. I mean, we are in an economic recovery, but it's a very uneven recovery, right? It's very heavily slanted toward low-wage jobs. And I think to the extent that we can diversify our economy in the direction of manufacturing, absolutely. And I think that the thing here is that when you hear the governor, when you hear others talk about cutting the corporate income tax or other measures directed at the manufacturing sector, it's billed as a jobs program. And the big question is, does that work? The corporate income tax is relatively small. We're a really lean state. What are the kind of things that manufacturing businesses need to come here? Is it infrastructure? Mm-hmm. Is it workforce training? Do they have enough university graduates? Do they have enough technical school graduates? Is that what they need? Because I'll tell you, for the Finance and Tax Committee in the House, you know, we Republicans and Democrats, if it was Republican as the chair, were struggling with, you know, the governor's folks wanted to present on this plan, but the plan wasn't really fleshed out enough for
the
us
plan to cut manufacturing corporate taxes.
Yeah, the plan to cut manufacturing taxes, so to the point where we had some pretty basic questions for them in terms of how it would work, how would we measure whether or not it's working and producing jobs, and there was really no response whatsoever, to the point where it didn't really make sense for them to even present it, because we didn't know what they were presenting and we didn't know if it was going to work or not, or how we would determine if it was going to work or not. So I think there are some pretty fundamental questions that I think probably need to be answered before we can design this, because it really is pitched as a jobs program, and it needs to be more than just if you build it, they will come.
Governor Scott has been all about jobs in the first administration and second administration. And another fundamental question is, how is the best way to spend taxpayer money to grow the job market here in Florida? We'll get into that when the Sunshine Economy continues. From the WLRN studios at the Miami Herald, welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Florida's job market, at least according to the data, is booming big time. The unemployment rate in September, just 5.2%. A quarter of a million new jobs were created in the past year. And the biggest job gains have been in construction, healthcare, and tourism. Now, that's important to know when deciding if and how to spend taxpayer money hoping to attract jobs to Florida. Governor Rick Scott wants $250 million to seed incentive economic development packages, money that could be used to entice companies to relocate or expand here. Consider what the state legislature's top economist, Amy Baker, told a House committee, though, in October.
If it's a business that otherwise would have moved to Florida because it's retail of a nature that they need a physical presence to sell their product and they're dependent on our population growth, they or a competitor of theirs are likely to come to Florida anyway. And so if you invest in them coming to Florida when they likely would have come anyway, you're not really getting any bang for your buck out of that investment.
If it's a company that needs to be in Florida because a market's in Florida, her assessment is they'll come anyway. In this quest for job growth in Florida, how best to invest the state's money? How best to invest your money. We're joined by a quartet of South Florida lawmakers, Senator Anadira Flores from South Dade County, Republican, Senator Maria Sachs, Democrat from North Broward and Palm Beach, Representative Jose Javier Rodriguez, Democrat from downtown Miami, and Representative George Moraitis, Republican from the coast of Broward County. Senator Sachs, let's start here. Does Florida need to spend $250 million to grow its job market?
No. That's a simple answer. I think that we need to look at it very carefully. You know, I'm on the committee that appropriates funds for this growth, for Enterprise Florida. And I believe in Enterprise Florida, and I think we have some good people working there. I think that, however, we need to focus on pretty much what Amy Baker said, and that is instead of just having a gunshot, just a shotgun, not a gunshot, but a shotgun approach to it. We need to look at it in a surgical way, and that is what kind of jobs, careers are we looking for here in the state of Florida?
And what would your assessment
be? High tech. I mean, we should be the Silicon Valley of the Caribbean, of Latin America. Our high tech should reach down into across the pond into Europe, and we're not taking advantage of that.
Some of that high tech, Representative Rodriguez, is based in Brickell in your district. Some of the biotech, for instance, is based, Representative Moraitis, in your district along the coast of Broward County. Do you agree with the senator that that's an area that the state ought to be investing in, and not more generally speaking? Representative Rodriguez?
Well, we do. And I think, you know, the question about, should we be spending that amount of money, I totally agree with the senator. I mean, it's a surgical approach. It's where have the programs we've already been investing in worked, and where have they not? Because I think the sort of across-the-board increasing spending really can sometimes feel to the public and to me, honestly, as just giving out more tax money to your friends, right? And we really do need to reform Enterprise Florida because, you know, it's really been the subject of a lot of criticism in terms of how decisions are made. But in terms of the programs they administer, a lot of them are very well designed, and some of them aren't. But I think that absolutely one area where we really do need to figure out ways to support RN technology. And I think we do that largely through our university system.
So that may not be a job growth incentive package, an incentive package to entice a company to come to South Florida, but instead invest in higher education.
That's correct. I think if you look at what creates technology clusters and those sort of things, what really creates long-term growth of local businesses and keep them here? Because one of the things that we see in Miami is a lot of times our tech businesses, they leave at a certain point, whether it's because they can't get access to capital, they can't get access to high-quality employees. We do have, in several different parts of Florida, including here in Miami, a really vibrant tech and entrepreneurial sector, but it's missing components. And how can we as the state contribute to that? All the energy is really coming at the local level. And I think part of that is the way the Enterprise Florida is designed is it's these big packages for big companies. And it's not really focused generally on smaller businesses, smaller startups.
And that was kind of what the state economist Amy Baker was telling the House panel, essentially, was that to focus on luring out-of-state companies here that may otherwise come, instead invest in small companies, Senator Flores, that are already here in that job growth. But what about this focus on the number of jobs as opposed to the focus on jobs and what they pay? The median wage in Florida has not gone up in 10 years. I mean, the average Floridian has not seen a pay increase when given inflation over the last decade. So how do you address that from the state legislative level?
Well, what we have to look at is what are the type of jobs nationally and even internationally that are high paying, and how do we start to invest in not just bringing those jobs to Florida, but more importantly, how do we ensure that it will be Floridians who are prepared for
that
job?
Yeah.
And so that starts, of course, at the very beginning. It starts at pre-K and kindergarten. I mean, really not kidding around, it starts that young. My oldest son is in first grade. My oldest son is already very involved in a robotics class that is all teaching about the fundamentals for engineering and STEM education. You have to start that young.
So Representative Moraitis, what it sounds like we're hearing is push these job development dollars over into education.
Well, I would first of all say that you have to do both. I mean, so there are some people who sort of categorically don't like to do incentive programs. I would say as long as they have the accountability, and the Florida, Enterprise Florida does have accountability. You have to show job growth or you really don't get the money in the end. So I would say there is accountability. It's definitely been reformed over the past several years from sort of the bad old days. But I would, of course, if you don't do the education, you don't have the jobs, the people prepared to take the jobs, and it's not really going to help. I would just quickly say that I find incentive programs to be more of a gap filler. It doesn't sort of solve the fundamentals of your economy, mm-hmm. but you could bring in a big business that might help that area for a while. But at some point, like the other panelists have said, you have to develop the education, you have to develop the infrastructure. Lots of other things have to go on.
Yeah, so I'll give an example, and this is just kind of overall. I think that these tax incentive programs should have some sort of perhaps sunset review looking at. So Representative Moriaitis and I are both filing a bill this year for a specific tax incentive that was created several years ago with regards to jet fuel, the fuel for airplanes. Mm-hmm. And that was designed to bring some new airlines to the state of Florida. And it worked. It worked. South Florida is now a booming hub for JetBlue across the state, for Southwest, for Silver Airlines. And now that it's been working, it's been about several years, now we're looking at that and we're going to be changing the incentive program a bit so that it not just helps these smaller companies that have brought jobs to Florida, but also ensures that the more stable employers, American Airlines, for example, here in South Florida, that they have some of that incentive as well. So, but that came as a result of a review of an existing incentive program. And I think that's something that we should put, quite frankly, into all of our incentive programs.
Well, speaking of an existing program that is only going to be in its second year when you folks go back to Tallahassee in January is the Amendment 1 program regarding spending on the environment. We'll get into that next when the Sunshine Economy continues. We're back on the Sunshine Economy from the WLRN studios at the Miami Herald. I'm Tom Hudson. One piece of state spending that voters decided, not lawmakers, is how much to spend on the environment. Amendment 1 passed with overwhelming support, requiring the state to spend a third of real estate documentary stamp taxes on acquiring, restoring, improving, and managing Florida's environment. The conservation groups have sued over the first year of the money. It amounted to $740 million. The lawsuit is winding its way through court. In the meantime, the legislature will gavel back in a session in January. Representative Jose Javier Rodriguez from downtown Miami, what are the guidelines for this Amendment 1 money as you understand it?
Well, I think what the voters have told us, overwhelmingly, as you said, is that they want us to use an existing revenue stream to support a whole range of conservation efforts. Land acquisition is at the center of that.
But land acquisition was a tenth of the money
that's exactly right. Legislature
appropriated.
Yeah, no, that's correct. And
a quarter of it went to just operating expenses, salaries and upkeep and maintenance.
No, you're absolutely right. So I think from my perspective, a quarter of it went to existing wage and benefit obligations, and another, I think 20% went to existing debt service. So at least 45% of what the legislature appropriated last year is very clearly in violation of Amendment 1.
So it should not go to debt service or operating expenses.
Well, no, because this is supposed to be basically what new are we doing as a legislature as a result of this? And I think the word I would use is sort of boldface. It's almost asking for the state to be sued to be out of compliance, which is what happened.
If that was the case, the state got what it asked for here. Representative Moraitis, your understanding about using these Amendment 1 dollars for operating expenses and debt service, okay?
No, thank you, Tom. I would respectfully disagree that the dollars sort of have to go to land acquisition. The amendment is very broad. If you read the text of it, it does not say any particular amount of money or percentage of money has to be spent on any particular activity. It even includes things like recreation in it. But obviously, the way we approached it is we're not, and the speaker said this, Speaker Chris Cifulli, was that we're not really maintaining the lands well that we have right now. And so it's really not good to go out and acquire a lot more land, although we did some of that, and just simply put it over there, let it become sort of a problem since we're not maintaining it properly, take it off the tax rolls. we need to do conservation. I'm big on the money needs to be spent for things like, you know, securing our water supplies, and there's a lot of needs in Broward County right now to do that.
How about sea level rise and adaptation and reinforcement?
Well, I mean, it's definitely happening. I mean, who's causing it and what's, you know, how much we could affect that in terms of human activity is certainly open to debate, but the fact that it's happening is obviously a fact, so we have to address that. And in Broward County, we're doing things to address that.
So just you accept that the seas are rising. The question is, should these Amendment 1 dollars be used in your coastline, which your entire district has the coastline of Broward County, to reinforce and adapt?
Yes, they should be. In fact, we're spending a lot of money on beach renourishment to bring more sand, and Senator Sachs has been a big champion of that as well, to at least in Broward County. So there's lots of things we need to do to address sea level rise and building construction, you know, beach renourishment, water supply issues, as you know, some of the wells get migrated with salt.
Senator Flores, Senator Sachs, your understanding of these Amendment $1, are they being appropriated appropriately?
Well, part of the issue is that the amendment was overly broad, and I think that's part of an overall issue that I have with putting amendments into the Constitution.
But it is in the Constitution. It is codified right now. It's what you have to live by.
It is. Yeah. No, it is. But the issue that I have is that the way that those who are criticizing the way that we've spent the money now are those who wrote the amendment, but they admit that the amendment was drawn in an overly broad, somewhat generic matter. And so I guess if there's an issue, well, then we need to deal with it statutorily. But we have spent a lot of money, and we've spent a substantial amount of dollars, particularly not just for land acquisition, but I think Representative Moriarty makes a great point in that, is it worth it to just continue to buy more land just so that we say we have it if then we don't go and maintain it? That maintenance has to happen as well.
Senator Sachs?
This is such a great question for all of us around this table, because the most environmentally sensitive area in this entire country is where we all represent, which is Southeast Florida. The counties of Palm Beach, Broward, Miami-Dade, Monroe counties are experiencing climate change. And, you know, when you're on the ocean, and I represent the coast from Boynton Beach to Hollywood, now, nobody cares who caused it. They want to know what are they going to do to protect their property. And this is a big issue. The reason that the voters had this referendum is because we failed as a legislature to take care of our environment. Water is number one resource we need to make sure in our aquifers. We've got a fracking bill coming up. It's important.
There's another gradual thing going on regarding the environment, and that's in regards to fossil-fueled powered electricity generating plants. As you know, the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, has decided to join 23 other states in suing the EPA over these new rules that are supposed to limit carbon emissions over the next several years. Florida would be party to this because it's a federal standard, but the AG is suing over that. Representative Moraitis, do you support this lawsuit?
I do support the lawsuit, Tom. A lot of these things that the federal government tries to impose on us, these different standards, you know, there's nothing shown that that will actually work to do anything to actually control any kind of warming or anything else like that. So I feel like, and this ends up being a bipartisan issue in a lot of ways, you know, no one wants to see our citizens taxed more or pay much higher utility rates for something that's really not borne out by the science that will actually do anything to improve the condition of the earth. So that's a problem to me. I'd rather see the money put into making it a more robust and a cheaper system than making it more expensive.
Representative Rodriguez, is this bipartisan with this side of the table at least?
Well, I don't know about partisanship, but I take issue specifically with the use of the Attorney General's office to get involved in partisan fights. I mean, it's a trend we've seen of suing the EPA over all kinds of different things in the Obama administration. I think that there's actually an opportunity for Florida to come up with a plan that complies with what the EPA wants to do. Florida, relative to other states, that, you know, we don't have this, you know, gigantic coal footprint.
Right.
So it is an opportunity for us relative to other states that, you know, if they're fighting it, maybe it's kind of understandable because it's going to be an economic hit on them.
Senator Flores, meantime, there could be two amendments on the ballot next fall regarding solar energy, one backed by an out-of-state clean energy organization, the other backed by utility interests here in the Sunshine State. Do the rules regarding solar energy generation need to evolve in the state of Florida?
The answer is yes, they do need to evolve. However, it really is important for Floridians to think very, very hard about what should be in our Constitution and what shouldn't be. And here's a perfect example. Not only do you have two competing amendments, so what happens if both of them gets on? I mean, we really don't know the answer to that. But what are the costs associated specifically when it comes to solar energy? It's a great slogan, and it sounds very nice to say we are the Sunshine State, therefore we should have more solar energy. energy. I agree. I think there should be solar energy. I think that there are some roadblocks that exist in statute in order to expand the use of solar energy, and those should be removed. However, at the same time, one really needs to look at the cost to ratepayers. So you need to find that balance between good for the environment, but also good for the economy, not just statewide, but for the personal economy as well.
Well, go ahead, Senator Sachs.
Well,
yeah,
you know,
please.
This really goes towards the fact that we fail as a legislature to get some of the issues taken care of that people want. The reason we have so many referendums and constitutional amendments is because we are not listening to what the people want. And the biggest issue they want is they want our large utility to use some of the monies that we pay in FPL bills to bring it back instead of Next Gen Energy,
which is the parent company of FPL.
Absolutely.
It has wind energy farms in the Midwest.
It is the largest solar producer of energy in the country, and it starts right here in Florida. And we don't have it. We're not taking advantage of it. Solar, you go anywhere in the world, anywhere in this country, you see solar. You see wind energy. And we still have power lines. There's something wrong. And that's what leads to the referendum.
You're either going to have power lines even with wind energy and solar energy, though.
I would agree with the Senator. The legislature hasn't really done a good job on this. And so, you know, the fixing the Constitution is the option.
Speaking of where your districts are, a couple of your districts are really in flux. You don't know exactly what your district is going to look like in the next couple of years here. We'll talk about that when the Sunshine Economy continues. And we're back on the Sunshine Economy from the WLRN studios at the Miami Herald. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. So Florida lawmakers have had to meet three extra sessions this year. Two were supposed to settle on political boundaries, but neither did. Senator Ana Terra Flores and Senator Maria Sachs are two of those senators that are kind of waiting to see what those districts, what their districts will look like. Senator Flores, any resolution to this on the legislative side?
Unfortunately, this was another one of those examples of a constitutional amendment, in my opinion, gone awry. It was something that was done overly vague. The Constitution amendment, it says that a district shall neither favor nor disfavor an incumbent. And that's just an example of confusion, honestly. I mean, it either does favor or it doesn't favor. So we were in a difficult situation. For us specifically in South Florida, I was one of the senators who voted against the latest proposal in the legislature. And the reason I did is because I had serious concerns, along with the two other Hispanic senators in South Florida, about the retrogression that would have occurred under the map that was on the table and proposed for us. There were strong concerns that the map as proposed would essentially remove a Hispanic from South Florida. And that's something that I couldn't vote for.
Senator Sachs, is it too much to ask your fellow legislators to draw political boundaries?
Well, you know, the bottom line is that we do not have a government that represents the demographics of Florida. And very quickly, we know that there are a couple hundred thousand more registered Democrats than there are Republicans. Yet the entire government of Florida is Republican. And so I think that this whole lawsuit...
Well, that may whether, speak to voter turnout than demographics.
Well, no, it may look at and indicate that maybe our lines have not been drawn to represent the politics or the community of interest of the people of Florida. And I think there's a tremendous frustration in the state, whether it's Democrat or Republican. The bottom line is that hopefully the courts will do a better job than we did.
Senator Maria Sachs, that's where it lies right now. Senator Sachs from North Broward in Palm Beach County, thank you. Senator Ana Terra Flores from South Dade County, thank you for joining us as well. Representative Jose Javier Rodriguez from downtown Miami, thank you, sir. And Representative George Moraitis Jr., Republican from Broward County, thank you all for your time here on the Sunshine Economy. The program has our technical engineer with Wanda Miles downtown. I'm Tom Hudson at the WLRN studios of the Miami Herald. Thanks for listening.